Okay, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're digging into someone absolutely central to crypto, but maybe often misunderstood, Vitalik Buterin.
Yeah, the Ethereum co-founder.
Yeah.
It's quite a story from this young visionary with a white paper to, well, where he is now in late 2025.
Exactly. He's like the chief architect for this massive multi-trillion dollar asset class.
And yet the narrative around him feels really split, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You have the media almost painting him as this puppet master who could crash everything.
Or on the other side, you hear from retail investors that he's just gone quiet, maybe checked out.
Right. Total extremes.
So our mission today is to cut through that noise. We've looked at the on-chain data, forensic wallet tracking.
With the money, basically.
Yeah, following the money. And we've combined that with a quantitative look at his actual communications, his blog, his X activity.
To answer those key questions, is he really silent? And does he actually hold enough power financially to destabilize Ethereum?
What did we find sort of at the headline level?
Well, the big takeaway seems to be that his role has really evolved. He's less of a direct market player now, and much more of a long-term guide, focusing on the tech and the ethics. That perceived silence, it feels more like a perception gap.
Meaning.
Meaning his communication is there, it's just very technical, maybe too high signal for the general market noise.
Okay, let's tackle the biggest myth first then. This idea he's some kind of whale sitting on a hoard, controlling the market. What do the numbers actually say? Like right now, October 2025.
Okay, the raw number is impressive on its own. His known ETH addresses hold about 240,042 ETH.
Wow.
And with ETH hovering around, what, $4,200 to $4,400?
Yeah, in that range.
That's over 1.02 billion. $1 billion is, obviously a huge sum.
$1 billion. Yeah.
Oh,
Okay.
yeah.
But here's the crucial part, right? How much is that relative to the entire Ethereum supply?
That's the key context. The total circulating supply is roughly 120.7 million ETH.
Okay.
So his personal known stash, it works out to just 0.199% of the total.
But 0.199. So basically 0.2%.
Exactly. You can round it up to 0.2%.
That's surprisingly small. I mean, $1 billion sounds terrifying in one person's hands, but 0.2% of the network.
It's statistically almost background noise in terms of market structure.
Mm.
It's certainly not enough to cause systemic volatility or, crash the system single-handedly.
That directly contradicts the FUD narrative, then. He doesn't hold a controlling stake.
Not even close. You look at major exchange wallets or the ETH staking contract, which holds like 13 million ETH. Those are the dominant players in terms of sheer volume.
So, if his direct ETH holding isn't the source of his power, where does his influence come from financially? You mentioned how he allocates capital.
Precisely. It's not about the size of his stack, but the strategy. His investments perfectly mirror Ethereum's technical goals.
Like what? What's an example?
Well, his biggest single position outside of just holding ETH is a $12.33 million stake in the AVV3 lending protocol.
Okay, AVV. So core DeFi infrastructure.
Exactly. It's not some speculative punt on a meme coin. It's him putting capital into the foundational layers he helped envision. It's an endorsement.
And our research also pointed to off-chain stuff too, right? Investments in the underlying tech.
Yeah, very strategic. He's funding projects critical for Ethereum's future, particularly layer two scaling solutions and zero knowledge rollups.
ZK tech. That keeps coming up.
Because it's vital for scaling and privacy.
Yeah.
He's backing teams like Starknet, Kakarot, ZKEVM, MegaEth. These are builders pushing the envelope on ZK proofs.
So, just for anyone listening, zero knowledge proofs let you prove something is true without revealing the actual data behind it. Super important.
Right. And he's not just talking about it or writing about it on his blog. He's actively funding the teams making it happen. That alignment is powerful.
That alignment, that sort of intellectual capital backed by financial capital, really speaks to his intent, doesn't it? Which is important when people get spooked by market moves.
Absolutely. And speaking of intent, it's worth noting his personal ETH holdings used to be much higher. Back in the early days, he held over 700,000 ETH. That would be worth, what, over $3 billion today. So his personal stack has significantly decreased over time.
And there's this claim he makes, which is pretty bold, that he hasn't sold any ETH for personal gain since 2018.
Yes, and it's a claim that seems meticulously supported by the on-chain data we reviewed. The big movements you see from his wallets aren't personal cash outs.
For something
They're
else.
consistently philanthropic. He's using his wealth to fund public goods, research, ecosystem development, not, buying super yachts.
There are some really high-profile examples. That massive Eshaib token donation to the India COVID Relief Fund, that was $1 billion at the time.
Incredible scale. but also more targeted things like $9.4 million to the University of Maryland for air disinfection research.
Right, and ongoing support for effective altruism charities like GiveWell, MIRI, the Conroe Biotech Fund.
And this is where the market confusion, the FUD, fear, uncertainty, doubt often comes from. Well, an on-chain tracker flags a transaction. Vitalik sends ETH to an exchange. People see that headline and panic sell.
Thinking he's dumping his bags.
Exactly. But the reality, almost always, is that he sent the ETH to a charity or a research institute. They are the ones sending it to the exchange to liquidate it for their operating budget.
So the context behind the exchange transaction is completely missed. It's not him selling for profit.
Correct. It's information asymmetry causing short-term fear. You have to look deeper.
Now, contrast that his negligible impact on the ETH market with what happens when he touches meme coins.
Yes. The occasional market hygiene, as you called it. It's quite different.
People keep sending him unsolicited tokens, right? Trying to use his address for publicity.
All the time. They airdrop massive amounts of low liquidity coins to his public address, hoping it gives their project legitimacy or that he'll just ignore it.
But sometimes he doesn't ignore it.
Nope. Periodically, he seems to just, well, clean house. Mm-hmm. He liquidates these gifted tokens. And because they have such thin liquidity.
The price craters.
Oh, yeah. Tokens like Este, Ladog, they crashed like 65% or more almost instantly when he sold. Sometimes, bizarrely, his action even pumps a coin. If the market interprets it differently, rallies of over 100% have happened too.
So it's unpredictable, but the message is clear.
Pretty much. Stop using my wallet as a billboard for your speculative project. It disincentivizes that tactic.
Okay, let's shift gears to the communication paradox. The popular idea is Vitalik's gone quiet, retreated.
The data just doesn't back that up at all. Our quantitative review shows his public communications has actually increased quite significantly.
Increased?
How? Look at his blog. In all of 2022, he published maybe 5 posts. Year to date, as of October 2025, he's already published 18.
18? That's a big jump. That's not someone disengaging.
Not at all. And his activity on X, formerly Twitter, also surged. We counted at least 158 posts and replies just in August 2025.
So he consciously re-engaged there.
Seems like it. Maybe responding to criticism that his deeper thoughts were getting lost on more niche platforms only developers read.
But it's not just the frequency, is it? It's the type of communication that's changed.
Exactly. That's the core of it. His old role was, kind of, the evangelist. Selling the grand vision of Ethereum as the world computer to everyone.
And the new role.
Now, he's clearly operating as the chief scientist, or maybe chief architect, of a mature network. His writing is almost entirely focused on deep, complex technical challenges.
Like the ZK snarks we mentioned.
ZK snarks, simplifying the core layer one protocol, and crucially, post-quantum cryptography.
Let's pause on that. Post-quantum cryptography. That means hardening Ethereum against future quantum computers that could break today's encryption.
Yes. Planning for a threat that might be years, maybe decades away. It shows an incredible long-term commitment to the network's security and lifespan.
He's even shifted the framing, right, from world computer to...
world ledger. It's a subtle but important shift. Less about running everything on chain, more about being the secure, verifiable record keeper for the world. Identity, history, assets.
Okay, so this intense focus on deep tech is why people think he's silent.
That's the perception gap. His communication is still happening. It's just incredibly high signal, very technical. It's aimed at core developers, researchers, cryptographers.
And that signal gets completely lost in the noise.
Drowned out. The modern crypto space is just saturated with high volume, low complexity chatter, price speculation, memes, hype cycles. His dense technical work doesn't easily translate.
Which leads us to this idea of a great narrative divergence in the 2025 market. His vision is competing with much louder narratives.
Definitely. There are at least 2 major competing philosophical poles right now.
First poll, Buterin versus, say, the Bitcoin maximalist view, often championed by Michael Saylor.
Right. Totally different goals, different audiences. Saylor's focus is singular. Bitcoin is digital gold or apex property. It's about price appreciation, institutional adoption. He's talking to CFOs.
Simple message, relentless focus on price.
Whereas Buterin is talking about a general purpose platform, decentralized governance, complex technical trade-offs, utility beyond price. He's talking to developers.
You're not even playing the same game, really.
Not at all. Different metrics for success entirely.
And the second competing poll, even louder, perhaps.
The cultural narrative. Specifically, politicized meme coins. We saw this huge surge with tokens like Trump and Melania, mostly on Solana.
Coins with zero actual utility or tech behind them.
None whatsoever. Pure cultural speculation. And yet, at their peak, those two alone had a combined market cap of around $9.5
billion. $9.5
billion.
That's staggering. It shows the raw power of memes and cultural alignment, doesn't it?
Undeniably. And this is precisely the kind of thing Buterin seems to, well, dread. He's been very clear he dislikes crypto being dominated by pure greed and speculation.
He wants it to have real-world impact.
Yes. He said things like, the goal should be meaningful effects in the real world, not just playing games with million-dollar pictures of monkeys.
So you can see why his deep technical focus gets overshadowed when billions are flowing into politically charged JPEGs or meme coins. The market's attention span is elsewhere.
Exactly. He's focused on building the foundations for the next 50 years, while the market is often obsessed with the next 50 minutes.
Okay, before we wrap up and synthesize, there was one more related technical trend. Our research flagged this renewed interest in privacy coins.
Right, privacy tech. Driven by concerns about financial surveillance, CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, people are looking again at cryptocurrencies designed for privacy.
And this connects to Buterin's focus on ethical tech and user control. What's the specific market shift we saw in October 2025?
A very clear preference emerging. Monero, XMR, has decisively overtaken Zcash, ZEC, in market cap.
The number.
Monero's sitting around $6.31 billion market cap, while Zcash is down around $2.85 billion, a significant gap.
Why? What's the difference that the market seems to be valuing?
It boils down to enforcement. Monero enforces privacy by default for all transactions. It uses ring signatures, stealth addresses everyone's transactions, contribute to the overall anonymity set, making it stronger.
Mandatory privacy.
And
Zcash.
Zcash's privacy features, using ZK snarks, ironically, are optional. Most transactions are actually transparent, like Bitcoin's.
Why? Convenience. Regulation fears.
Probably a mix of both. But the result is that the actual anonymity set for private Zcash transactions is much, much smaller and potentially weaker.
So the market, when it genuinely seeks privacy utility, is putting a premium on the asset that mandates it, that builds it in rigorously.
Exactly. It suggests sophisticated users value enforced privacy over optional features when privacy is the actual goal. It's a vote for commitment in design.
Interesting. Okay, so let's pull this together. What does this mean for you, the listener, trying to make sense of Vitalik Buterin in 2025?
Well, first off, he's clearly not the founder evangelist trying to move the market day to day like he might have been perceived in, say, 2017. That role is gone.
His influence now is different.
It's fundamentally shifted. He's a long-term steward. His power comes from his intellectual output, setting the technical roadmap, defining the problems, and his strategic capital, funding those public goods, funding the ZK tech, the core infrastructure.
Guiding the ship from the engine room, you said earlier, not shouting from the deck.
Yeah, that feels about right. He's focused on the deep, long-term structural integrity of the network.
So the actionable intelligence for you listening is pretty clear then.
I think so. If you want to understand where Ethereum is really heading long-term, you have to actively filter out the noise.
The FUD about him selling the daily meme coin drama.
Exactly. Ignore that low signal chatter. Instead, pay attention to his blog, read the Ethereum research forums, follow the technical proposals. That's where the future direction is being debated and built.
Focus on the signal, not the noise.
Precisely.
And that leads us to our final thought, something for you to consider.
Given everything we've discussed, especially his intense focus now on these highly complex, long-term challenges like post-quantum cryptography, preparing for quantum computers, what does the sheer necessity of planning for that kind of future threat tell us about the timescale Vitalik Buterin is operating on? What does it reveal about the fundamental resilience and the expected lifespan he anticipates for Ethereum?
He's not thinking about the next quarter or the next year.
He's thinking decades, maybe longer, building something designed to potentially outlast current nation states or financial systems. That's the implication of preparing for quantum computing now.
A very compelling thought to end on. Building for resilience across generations. Thank you for diving deep with us today.